The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com when I get around to posting them, and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Insert long Facebook people aren't nice joke here. Co-hosting with me, no one. This will actually be the last weekend for no one, though. Next weekend, I've got a surprise for you guys. Should be pretty awesome. We've got a cool show lined up with David Williams from the Personal Defense Academy tonight, discussing the May 23rd, 1996, Dayton, Ohio, District 3 headquarters ambush that not many people are familiar with, which I think is a shame because there's a lot of things that you can learn from that particular instance, incident. So just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s ARs scatter guns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent pen and QDC quick detach side saddle shell carrier. Soon to be available for pre-order. It's actually available right now. Check out the new rigid interchangeable side saddle carrier, changing how you look at shotguns forever. Find out why Steve Fisher, Chris Fry, and myself all call it the best hard mount side saddle carrier ever invented. Would you like to know more? Visit AridusIndustries.com. Starship Troopers reference there. So, anyway. Nerd. Let's get David on the line. The show will get better once I stop talking. Joining us, David Williams. Hey, how's it going, David?
Oh, I am fine today. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, not too bad. So the last time you were on the show, you were here in studio. This time we've got you on the telephone, so hopefully I don't hang up on you. Though I haven't done that in a while, but I always get nervous when I'm by myself in the booth here.
Well, I hope you don't, but you can always call me back, I think.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. We'll see. So for those that don't know, can you go over your background real quick, and then we'll sort of set the scene for what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Well, I am a retired lieutenant from the Dayton, Ohio Police Department, and in 1996, I was a sergeant assigned to the 3rd District on the west side of Dayton and was working the day shift at that particular time.
Okay, so and this particular date is of interest to us because we have what, for whatever reason, a lot of people think that the ambush of police officers is sort of a newer thing. That's not the case at all. This has been going on for quite some time. This one, you know, we're coming up on 19 years, approaching 20 years since this happened. So can you sort of tell us what went on before your involvement in this, and then we'll just sort of get to your part of the day?
Sure. Earlier in the day before this happened, there was a gentleman by the name of Brian Catron, who was a potato chip truck delivery driver. He had gone to a local carryout that was in one of the housing projects not too far from our district headquarters, and he had delivered some items there to one of the places, and our suspect, young man by the name of Maurice Fareed. His mother owned that particular carryout. He was working there that day, and he was a distraught young man, had a lot of problems with people, and they kept a 9mm handgun there for personal defense inside the store, which probably was a prudent thing. But on this particular day, he used that handgun in a very inappropriate manner.
Right. So we have a gentleman, and I'll use that word too, and I apologize because clearly not, but I'm sort of trained to be polite at least while I'm on the air. We have a person working at this convenience store, like you said, troubled young man. We have a potato chip delivery truck driver shows up at the store, and what happens next?
While Brian, the delivery driver, is putting his items down in the different racks, he's down on his hands and knees delivering the stuff. The suspect, Maurice Fareed, comes up behind him, has the handgun in his hand, and basically executes him while he's down on his hands and knees.
Okay.
Shoots him in the back of the head, kills him almost instantly, as best we can tell. And he fishes around in his pockets, recovers the keys to the truck that he used, and he takes those keys, gets in the truck, and starts driving.
All right. Now, and I forgot to ask you this before the show. Was there ever a motive established after the fact for this, or just a guy with a lot of problems, probably mentally unbalanced, and today was the day?
Well, yeah, actually, there were a couple of stories, news stories that were run where they interviewed the mother. The carryout was in a minority neighborhood. It was run by a minority family. And apparently he had said on many occasions that he was tired of being oppressed, and that he blamed white men for doing that, and this was his revenge.
Okay. So he executes the delivery truck driver, steals the truck. We got about a minute and 30 seconds left. What's he do with the truck? What happens next?
He drives directly to our 3rd District headquarters, which is just a few minutes away, pulls up as two young rookie officers are walking in the front door to begin their shifts. They are walking in. One, I believe, had the gun belt kind of racked over his shoulder. And as they were walking in, he parks the truck, walks up to them, greets them somehow, like, "Hello, officers, how are you today?" And they say hello, sort of give him a royal wave, and he begins shooting.
Okay. So at that point, we've got the two officers. We got about 45 seconds left.
Right.
He shoots both of them right there.
Yeah. Jason Grossnickel was the first to be shot. He fired at Jason, caught him in the hand. Jason reacted, kind of doubled over. He turned and shot toward Rod Cleaver, shot him in the face. The wound was very severe, probably thought he killed him because of all the blood.
Right.
Thought he shot him in the head. And he turned back at that point to Jason and basically, again, executed Jason at a close distance by shooting him in the head.
All right. Here's a good place to stop. Right now we're discussing the May 23rd, 96, District 3 headquarters ambush with David Williams from Personal Defense Academy. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Darkstar Gear. Whether you know the color of the boathouse at Hereford or only know the color of Mace Windu's lightsaber in your mom's basement, perfect recreation. Darkstar Gear has a solution to your gear carrying needs. Check out their clip-on holster for small semi-autos and revolvers or their highly adjustable full-size AIWB holster. They even have a belt wrap sheath for when you need to shank a fool with your popular fixed blade centerline knife. Really ties your EDC together, like that one rug I used to have. Designed, developed, and pressure tested at classes with professionals for real life, not Instagram. Find out more at darkstargear.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier, available now for pre-order. Would you like to know more? Find out at AridusIndustries.com. So, we are talking with David Williams from Personal Defense Academy. David, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
So, before the break, where were we at? We had this individual has just murdered one police officer, seriously injured another, as they were walking in for their shift at the District 3 headquarters. Now, one of them was armed, but not really wearing his gun in a traditional sense. Was the other in uniform or ready to go? Or
yeah, we believe that Officer Cleaver, as I've been told, was fully armed and ready to go, and was able to return fire.
Okay. After having been shot in the face?
Yes.
Okay.
Very serious wound. Yes.
So, I guess a lesson number one that a lot of people seem to think, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but a lot of people seem to have an idea about how handgun rounds affect human beings when they're shot. They're not always very effective at all, are they?
No, not at all. Through my career, I've seen a lot of people shot, a lot of different places, a lot of different calibers, and a lot of different situations. And handgun rounds are not terribly effective. The reason we carry them, as you well know, are because they're portable and we can have them handy and they're reasonably concealable.
Right.
But, you know, if you need a defensive round, if you need a defensive firearm, then anybody with a lick of sense goes to a long gun.
Okay. So this is kind of where you come into the story. And just to be clear, too, this is your recollection of the event, and I know you wanted to say that beforehand, but this is your recollection of the event. Other people might have separate recollections of it based off of where they were at and what they saw, didn't see, but this is your account of it, correct?
Correct. Yeah, this is my perception, you know, and the memories that I have and what I experienced. Other people were involved in it. There were many officers that acted very bravely that day, and by no way, shape, or form am I the only person that was there that responded.
Yeah, okay. So what were you doing when this is going on, or what? Tell me how you come into this.
Well, I was the sergeant for the first shift, was inside getting ready to wrap up the day, was actually talking to an old classmate of mine. We were getting ready to have a very large administrative meeting, and we're also changing shifts, which is why the two younger officers were coming in, Rob and Jason, because they were getting ready to come on for our next shift. And heard the gunfire, the first set of shots that were fired, which, to be quite frank, in that neighborhood was not too terribly unusual, although it did seem a little closer than normal.
Right.
When Rob returned fire, it was a large volley of fire.
Right.
And obviously at that point something was wrong.
Yeah.
And from that point I left the roll call room that I was in and pretty much charged just out into the middle of the parking lot, pretty foolishly, to be honest. Just kind of busted out the front door and came face to face with Rob. Jason was already dead. He was at the door, and as I opened the door, his body was to the left, and to be honest, I didn't even see him. I didn't know he was there.
Yeah.
I saw Rob, and Rob told me, who you're referring to, Maurice Freed, just shot me and pointed toward the van, the truck that he had stolen, that was trying to get out of this very cramped parking lot we had. And the interesting thing happened to me, when I looked at Rob, I did not remember seeing him. He had been shot in the face. He was bleeding profusely, very serious wound. And to this day, I don't remember seeing him.
But you remember talking to him, but don't remember actually visually making
no.
him?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I do not remember seeing him to this day.
Huh. So the individual that has opened fire on you guys is back in the truck trying to exit the parking lot, spots you and other responding officers and decides he wants to get out and fight some more.
Right. It's a big, bulky delivery truck, box
right.
truck, and he can't get out of this spot that he's in.
Right.
So he backs up as far as he can. I think he actually hit the wall, which is a very large wall, and probably about 12 feet high or maybe even higher. And gets out, and as he rolls out of the van facing us, he points the gun toward me and begins to fire.
Okay. So was there anything in particular going through your head at this point, or anything that you noticed, or what were your thoughts as all this is occurring?
Well, obviously I'm trying to process everything. I'm told that this guy's shooting. I've heard the shots, and interestingly enough, there were in excess of 72 rounds fired during the whole gunfight. I remember the first shots when I was inside, but I didn't hear any afterwards. So there was complete auditory exclusion for all the rounds that were fired.
Right.
I see the gun, and obviously I respond. And it was, it really is like you always hear. You respond the way you were trained. And fortunately for me and other people, we had very good trainers that were very serious about their business for the Dayton Police Department. I had been trained and had been in other shooting before, had been involved in a lot of stress events, and I think maybe was somewhat inoculated to the stress. So I was able to process what was going on, immediately engaged. So Drew started the fire. I was out in the middle of the parking lot, so I had absolutely no cover whatsoever.
Right.
And I realized that was not a good place to be. So there was a car that I had walked past. It was the district commander of the lieutenant's car, and I started working toward that as he and I are exchanging gunfire.
Now, what distance is he at from you?
About 100 feet during the whole exchange.
So about 30, 34 yards, somewhere in there?
Somewhere in that range, yeah.
All right. Do you remember drawing your pistol? I forgot to ask you before the show, or was it just kind of in your hand?
You know, I don't remember the conscious thought. I mean, obviously, I know I had it in my hand,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, the evidence speaks to that.
Yeah.
So you start shooting at him, he's shooting at you, you're moving to a vehicle to take cover.
Yes.
Do you make any hits at that distance, or is it hard to say?
It's hard to say. The ballistics were a little inconclusive when they did all the examinations. So I've heard different results. The results that generally I've heard is that I probably hit him about 10 times high center mass, somewhere in that range. Other officers also made some impacts as well. Okay. The actual number may be lower. We don't know for sure.
Okay. Now, so you move to cover. How many rounds did you fire while you're moving to cover?
I pretty much emptied the entire magazine as I'm moving.
Okay. What were you guys carrying at the time?
Glock 22s.
All right, so 40 caliber, 16 rounds total on the gun.
Yes.
Okay. So you're moving to cover. You maybe hit him, you know, you hit him around 10 times total throughout the incident. You possibly...
I don't think I hit him that much when we were moving, to be honest.
Okay. So
I may have hit him a few times because I did an emergency reload and then engaged again, and that's when I actually got on my sights.
Okay, so is that happening as you're getting to cover or once you finally get to the car?
I think once I got to the car, I settled down a little bit. I realized that my method of sighting the gun was not effective at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had hit him a few times, but obviously something was not right.
Right.
He wasn't going down. As a matter of fact, he was moving laterally like he'd been trained. He wasn't crossing his feet. He was moving low, squatted down, and it looked like he'd been trained. So I'm processing all this, and I realized, you know, I better stop this guy. I've got to stop him because he is serious.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here. So once I got behind the car, even though I didn't really do a good job of taking cover because I was still standing up behind the car and the glass wasn't really offering me a whole lot of cover, I got on the sights. And I remember thinking, front sight, smooth press.
Yeah.
Front sight, smooth press. Because that's a mantra that I'd used for many years because I just knew I had to do it. And at that point, I think it was delivering some actual effective fire.
So we got about a minute and 20 seconds left before we get to break. Now, you say you'd gotten behind the car, but you weren't using it effectively. So were you standing up on the driver's side, passenger side of the car, shooting over the top of the car?
Yeah, I was shooting over the top of the hood of the car.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sorry, the roof.
Okay.
The actual passenger section.
Right. Do you remember if you were bracing on the roof or not, or hard to say?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm pretty tall, as you know, yeah. I'm relatively tall. So it was a more natural stance for me just to stand up. And I don't recall squatting down and using any support at that point.
Okay. So it was a conscious decision to get on your sights?
Yes. I remember thinking, I need to focus here. I need to get on the front sight. I need to smooth press the trigger. I need to be accurate here.
Okay. And that's, you know, interestingly enough, the other folks I've talked to that have been in situations like that, that's something they a lot of times say is, yeah, I decided to get on the sights because what I was doing wasn't working. We've got to go to break. We're talking with David Williams from the Personal Defense Academy. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. And also, Aretis Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier. Available now for pre-order. Would you like to know more? Visit them at AretisIndustries.com. So, just a quick reminder, the October giveaway that we do with Top Gun Supply for the Lucas Oil product package was ended yesterday, and the winner, Scott Reichard, I apologize if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, Scott, will be contacted tomorrow to be given the opportunity to claim his prize. We'll be starting the new giveaway tomorrow as well. Not sure what the prize package is going to be yet because I'm behind on my work because I suck, but should be going up tomorrow. Check out the Facebook page then to get entered. Doing that every month with Top Gun Supply because we like giving back to you guys. So we're talking with David Williams from the Personal Defense Academy about the May 23rd, 96, District 3 headquarters ambush in Dayton, Ohio. Now, David, you had said before the break you were going through a mantra in your head, you know, front sight, smooth press, because that's what you had done, you know, in the past when you were training, and you recognized that what you were doing before wasn't working and you needed to be more accurate?
Yes.
Okay. So what's going on, I guess, is all this is happening right now. You've gotten behind a car, you've sought cover, reloaded. How did you know that you needed to reload? What was your first indication?
Well, I don't really recall. So I must have recognized that there was a lockback, and I did the emergency reload just based on my training.
Right.
That I don't consciously remember doing. I do recall that when it was all said and done, and they said, well, you know, they did the scene check, and they were telling me that, you know, this was my magazine. I was like, oh, really? I was kind of surprised by that. Yeah. Because I marked my magazines with my initials. So that was kind of a surprise. But, I had reengaged. By that time, other officers had come out. Sergeant Frank Lander had come out. He was to my right side, and he had taken up a position and also engaged. He had probably delivered one of the more effective shots that hit Maurice Fleet above the left eye. But even that didn't penetrate. So we had all this vaunted talk about headshots. Headshots, I've seen a lot of times, are not effective. And in this particular case, it was more effective than not effective.
Right.
But it did not stop the fight completely. He hit Maurice right at the bridge of the eyebrow. Apparently, the bullet deflected down or shattered a little bit, and it blew out his left eye.
Yeah.
And at that point, Maurice had dropped the firearm, sort of crumpled down a little bit, and the gun was still within range to be picked up, but he had pretty much stopped the gunfight at that point.
So what we that's interesting too, because you bring up an interesting point. A lot of people, once again, have ideas about headshots on people. This particular one, a 40 caliber, and you guys were using the Hydra Shocks at the time, right? 180 grain Hydra Shock?
Yes.
Okay. Strikes him in the eyebrow. It deflects down, removes his left eye, but does not penetrate into the brain. Does not physically stop him. He decides that he doesn't want to get shot anymore at that point.
Right. If I had to describe that as either a physical stop or a psychological stop, it is my opinion, based on what I saw, if he chose, he could still continue to fight.
Okay.
So I think it was a psychological stop, not a physical stop.
And this is after he's taken 10 rounds high center mass, that this happens.
Well, and not only that, but the wall that he was standing by, that was my backstop and our backstop, was a large stone wall. And apparently we were, the people that had fired, myself and other officers, were all very close. And all those rounds that hit, they had backsplash, and the backside of his entire body had just been shredded from the stone and the lead that had bounced off of that. They told me that was actually incredible, the amount of damage, because he was close enough to the wall that stone and the bullets were ricocheting off of that.
Right.
And he was catching that as well. Of course, it wasn't lethal, but it was still a lot of damage to his body as well.
Well, so that brings an interesting point to mind. A lot of people will talk about things like, you know, devastating wounds and things like that, and what they're talking about is pain compliance. Do you given your observations of how he was acting, do you think he even noticed that?
No. As a matter of fact, when I was convinced, especially once I got up on the sights behind the car, I was convinced that I was hitting him, and I believe that the evidence proves that out. And at that point, I thought he might have had some type of body armor on.
Mm-hmm.
And also the autopsy later on showed that he didn't have any drugs in his system.
Right.
So he decided that
he was going to fight. And
well, yeah, he came with a vengeance. He wanted to do some killing that day, and he did.
So the, I guess one of the things that you could make the comment there is the only sure headshots would be ones that enter through the ocular cavity and actually hit the base of the brain.
Right, the deep brain shots.
Right. So at that point, he's down on the ground. He's done fighting. He's taken 10 rounds high center mass, one semi-effective shot to the head. How long before, and he did end up dying, but how long before he expired?
I believe it was about 30 minutes. That was at the hospital. He was removed by medic. We had some confusion getting the medics there, as I recall, because the medics thought they were responding to multiple victims at the original shooting
right out
of the carryout.
Okay.
It took some time to clear that up, but they needed to come to our district headquarters. So I believe it was somewhere in the, and I'm not absolutely certain about that, but somewhere around 20 or 30 minutes. And five of those rounds had penetrated through his body, I'm told.
Okay.
Complete penetration through and through.
I guess what was the initial aftermath? I mean, what were your thoughts as this is, you know, going on and as it ends? Was there anything that struck you as particularly odd or not odd about how you reacted?
It's funny you should mention that. Afterwards, we had a lot of things that we needed to do, secure the scene, obviously, get people treated. When the internal affairs detectives came out, myself and Sergeant Glander, we were kind of just doing the business that we needed to do, and they didn't even realize at first that we were involved in the shooting. We were both pretty seasoned officers, Frank more so than myself. And I guess it was just a matter of the experience and the knowledge It wasn't that I think I was, or Frank was, any better, or that we had some superpowers. It's just through our years of being exposed to all that, I don't know, maybe we were inoculated a little bit.
Right. So this entire gunfight occurs at that 33, 34-yard range?
Well, the initial ambush with the two officers was pretty much right on top of them.
Right.
My part of it and Frank Landers and the other officers were probably, and I think there was one other officer involved, probably in that 34-yard range. Yeah.
So that's well beyond the typical ranges we see, even in law enforcement shootings. You know, a lot of people will quote much shorter distances. In your instance, that's not what happened at all. We got about a minute and 20 seconds left if you want to talk about that a little bit. Or
yeah, I think, you know, you have to be prepared for it. You know, Frank and I were both old school cops. We had to qualify when we were shooting any firearm. We had to qualify at 50 yards. So the long distances for us were not anything unusual. And that's when we were carrying revolvers. And that included if we wanted to carry a small, like a model, Smith & Wesson Model 36 or Colt Detective Special, we had to be able to qualify at 50 yards with that.
Right.
So the skill, it's not that hard. I mean, it's just sight alignment and trigger press. I tell my students, you know, every time I draw the gun, you know, front sight trigger press, front sight trigger press. That's what the voices in my head tell me. Front sight trigger press every time. My son and I, when we went out to one particular place that we'd like to go shoot at, that's up in another county, we had I believe it was a 12-inch, maybe slightly bigger, metal target that was out at, I believe, 125 yards, maybe 100 yards. And we would take an old revolver out and just plink away at that.
Let me interrupt you there just because we have to go to break. Right now we're talking with David Williams. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TaxStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the Archframe target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with approaching 60,000 rounds of rifle and pistol ammunition without a single problem. Also shotguns. Got to give them love, too. For more information, visit them at TaxStrike.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC, quick-detach side saddle shell carrier. Soon to be available. Actually, soon as now. I really need to change that. Check out the new rigid interchangeable side saddle carrier, changing how you look at shotguns forever. Find out why Steve Fisher, Chris Fry, and myself all call it the best hard mount side saddle carrier ever invented. Would you like to know more? Visit them at aridusindustries.com. So we are talking with David Williams. Now, you were saying before the break that you would regularly go out with your son and just take an old revolver and plink at 125 yards on a 12-inch steel plate.
I think it was about, it may be a little bit bigger, I forget. Yes.
Yeah. You know, and I've done some videos before where I've made what some people consider, I guess, to be longer range shots. I practice at 50 yards pretty regularly just because it's easy for me to step in my backyard and I've got a target out at 50 that I shoot at, TaxStrike target, actually. But do you think that... I kind of want to, we're in our last segment, so I want to try and condense everything down into this. What are some things that you think this incident, you know, and clearly it's an example of one, but we can point to other incidents that are similar that have recently occurred. What do you think this should show people?
Well, the pistol is as effective as the person behind it, as far as being able to hit at longer distances.
Yeah.
However, we also have to understand that the pistol does have limitations as far as effectiveness. So if we have a concealed carry permit in Ohio, the average civilian doesn't have the opportunity to carry a loaded rifle around like someone that's operating under H.R. 218.
Right.
So that's kind of the limitation there. So you better be good with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be good with that. And you need to know when you can and can't use it. The decision-making process is key. That I think is a big thing. To be honest, to me, the marksmanship skills, the placing the bullet on the target, is really one of the easiest things to teach.
Mm-hmm.
That is not that hard. The difficult part is the tactics, the decision making, the preparation for it, making people understand that there are a lot of things that go on in a gunfight just besides, you know, making the bullet hit the target. In my experiences, not just in this one thing, but other things that happened in my career, I have experienced all the things that you read about in books, auditory exclusion, tunnel vision, all those different things that happen during a stressful situation, and they don't even have to be a gunfight.
Yeah.
I mean, they can be just a regular old fight. They can be just as painful or just as hurtful. So those are the things that I think people need to prepare for as well. You know, if you're going to do this thing that we call personal defense, it can't be just an 8-hour, hey, I got my CCW permit, and now I'm carrying around a gun, and it's a magical talisman that will keep me safe from all the bad boogeymen.
Well, let me ask you this, and I have, you know, some theories about this, but one of the things that I get to talk about a lot with people is unconscious competence. So being able to perform skills at an unconscious level, and what that allows you to do is it frees up mental processing power to make decisions. Do you think in this instance, if you had not been able to operate the gun at an unconscious level, and there are a couple of things that you talk about that make me, you know, think that based off of the information available that you were operating it at a mostly unconscious level, particularly the draw and the reload.
Yes.
If you had not been able to do that, do you think you would have fared as well?
No, absolutely not. There is no doubt in my mind. Now, the good news is, at that distance, because distance is our friend when we're trained,
yep,
and we're competent shooters, at that distance, I don't know that I would have been hurt, although there was a bullet that creased the window where I was standing,
yeah,
the rear window of that car. So, but to be honest, we don't know if it was his bullet or one of ours. I don't think I might have been hit necessarily, but certainly it could have been worse for me. There's no doubt.
Right.
Now, that level is always going to be better.
Well, and you bring an interesting thing. I actually just mentioned this on the Facebook page the other day, was that, you know, proximity negates skill. And a lot of people have said that. You know, I got that specific version of it from Ernest Langdon. But, you know, and what we're talking about there is the unskilled people at that distance, if they hit you, it's because they got lucky.
Yes.
Okay.
But the thing is, luck happens sometimes.
Yes.
Steve Whalen, one of our officers, was killed when a guy took an AR-15, dropped it out the back window of a pickup truck, didn't even look at him, pulled the trigger and shot him between the eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you tell people, you know, to get to the point where the mechanics are at an unconscious level and then focus more on your other skills?
I think the first thing is you have to make sure that your decision-making process is good, because you can have all the skills in the world, but if you hesitate, then you will not be able to react the way you need to.
Right.
You need to be competent in your decision-making process. Can you, if you need to, pull the firearm and use it to defend yourself? Can you make that decision? Are you good with that, whether it be for your religious reasons, for your social reasons, whatever it may be? Then do you have the skills to do that, the basic skills? Because there's plenty of people that are not well-trained or trained at all that defend themselves with firearms.
Yeah, happens all the time.
But that first step has to be, can I do that?
Right.
So do I know the law? Am I comfortable with making the decisions? And do I know what I need to do as a legally armed citizen? So if you do that and you're comfortable with that decision, then you definitely move on. Now, and these don't have to be, you know, well, I do this block first, and then, I mean, you can do it on a parallel course.
Right.
Preferably you're kind of doing it all at the same time. But then obviously you have to be able to hit what you're going to need to hit. Look at the distances in your house. What's the longest distance if you have to defend yourself there? Your workplace. Look at the odds of what the gunfights are likely to be, the distances.
Yeah.
But do we really know those? Because we base so much of that information on police information, and that may be spurious based on the way civilians are.
Right.
So, and that's another question as well.
Well, and I think, I want to say that it was attributed to Cooper, and I'm going to paraphrase, statistics are cold comfort when you find that you've been struck by lightning or something of that nature.
Yeah.
We have a couple minutes left in the broadcast. If people want to sort of get your take on all of this and sort of come out and work with you, where can they find you at? Are you teaching classes? What? Give us that information.
Yeah, I'm basically available for private lessons. And had his several programs, if anybody's interested. The website has been moved to a different domain, so it's very sparse right now, but it is personaldefenseacademy.com. There is a contact link on the front page, so if you have any questions, you can just link to that, and that will go to my email, and I'll be glad to contact you. The big thing that I'm doing right now is the Defensive Force Decisions Program, and this program is designed specifically based on Ohio law. There are, as you well know, there are people that are doing programs that are sort of, they're good programs. I mean, they're not bad at all, and I've gone to many of them. But they're based on just kind of general law for the entire country.
Right.
This is based on Ohio law specifically, what you may or may not do based on law, what will affect you as someone who lives, works, or travels through Ohio if you have to use any type of defensive force. We focus on the use of deadly force, but it also touches on other defensive force as well, because not every fight is a gunfight.
Well, that's an interesting thing, too, that not a lot of people think about, is they don't give themselves any options. They either don't work empty hand skills, or they don't consider a less lethal, if that's legal where you're living. It just seems to be a direction that a lot of people don't go for whatever reason.
Yeah. And if anybody's on Facebook, we have the Defensive Force Decisions Ohio Edition Facebook page as well. You can search that and hop on that with us as well, and we'll be posting information. And we'll also have instructor courses available. So if you teach a concealed carry class, if maybe you don't have the solid background that you'd like to have in your teaching classes, and you want to be able to give that solid information, we can teach you that information based on Ohio law, according to the Ohio Attorney General, so that you can give good, solid information to your students as well.
Perfect. David, I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. We're going to be going out here any second. So, look at that. Good timing. It's always a pleasure talking to you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Very much appreciate it. I'm looking forward to, I'm sure you'll be back on once your schedule allows, and I'll try and make it out to one of your classes. I've been remiss in not. So, I hope you enjoy the rest of your night.
Thank you. You too.
Hey, thanks. So, next week, once again, I don't know who we're interviewing, but I do know we're going to have a cool new addition to Ballistic Radio. Make sure you check out our website, www.ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.